Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. Oh, man.
What?
I'm beat. The holidays. I'm beat.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Just been staying up too late, playing too many video games.
Oh, I have been sick, which is why we actually didn't record last night, is because I don't know what it was, but I felt totally wiped for like a week, and then all of a sudden I just like had one night on Thursday night where I was just coughing ridiculously like all night long, and then so we didn't end up recording Friday, sorry guys, but we are here now with our Game of the Year episode. It is also Gamers Inn episode 150, which, I mean, we just had our 3-year anniversary, but I can't believe that we've done so many shows. It's been an absolute just rockin' time, and I am super stoked to get into this with you.
150. 150. That's 3 times 50, just to put it into perspective for everybody.
You are so lame.
I know. Math. Doing math on a Saturday. Okay, guys, let's tuck in. Put your calculators away. Let's do some long division.
Yeah.
No, let's play Shadow of Mordor. Or Smite. Or World of Warcraft. I don't know. What games do we play?
Anything
but math.
So we should jump right into this because we have a lot of stuff to cover tonight.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I do not have another 4-hour episode in me. So
we you reminded me we did a 4-hour episode.
Yeah. Crazy.
I split it into two, so.
I know. So I'm just going to give Ryan a huge shout out right now because honestly, the amount of work and organization that goes into this freaking episode is ridiculous. And I literally just opened the doc today and went, it's done. All I have to do is plug in the names of the games. This is perfect.
Well, okay. Don't thank present Ryan. Thank past Ryan. About 50 episodes ago, Ryan. And then when you thank him, he'll say, well, thank past Ryan because 50 episodes. We've been using kind of the same archetype for like what we choose because we're not an outlet. We could say the Gamers Inn Game of the Year is, and then we'd be here for 12 hours trying to determine whether it's X or Y. So we're just doing a bunch of categories. Most of these were from last year. I've added a couple just depending on to try and capture certain games that we really enjoyed over the last year. And we got rid of a couple categories because there's a lot of overlap. Mm-hmm. Smite. Did our best.
Yeah, so basically, just want to remind everybody before we get into this that this is a reflection of what Ryan and I have done mm-hmm. and played this year. It's kind of an overview of everything we've talked about on TGI. It's definitely not 100% extensive with every single indie game and every single AAA title. We play as much as we can, as much as we can afford, and as much as we can find the time for. So just keep that in mind when we don't pick your favorite game. No raging, please.
And we don't own everything. Like,
exactly.
You know, we've been pretty clear as to what consoles and what PC games we play, and I don't think any of this should come as a surprise.
Yeah. So when we just say Smite for every single title, then...
So I said I stormed into a Skype call this morning because someone had said that Josh was helping them with their Game of the Year choices, and I said, well, I got on the call, first thing I said was, no way does Smite have better music than any other game that came out this year. Come on.
Especially when it cuts in and out randomly or is just like totally overshadowed by whatever like crazy dance pop stuff I'm playing.
Well, see, that's the argument, because maybe that's your argument for it being best music, because the music that's always playing when you're playing Smite is Spotify.
Exactly.
Spotify. Music game of the year. I don't know.
All right, so we are going to jump right into this
now.
Yeah,
we should start.
First of all, we've got our first part of our awards is basically just overall general kind of stuff, and then we're going to jump into our most blah of the year. So, not blah. There is no most blah.
It's going to be a depressing second half.
I guess most disappointing game of the year would be most blah game of the year. But
we should change that to most blah game of the year.
All of our big awards are going to be in the second half of the show, but we are going to do this in an hour if it freaking kills me. So here we go. First of all, surprise hit of the year, Ryan. What took your breath away with how amazing it was when you had zero expectations?
Well, I wouldn't say it took my breath away, but Hyrule Warriors was my surprise hit of the year. I have never played Dynasty Warriors in my life, and I tried to avoid them at all costs.
Why would you do that?
Because they don't look that great. And it looks kind of like just a lot of like button mashing, and it's like, oh, okay, I just killed 1,000 dudes, and now I'm gonna have this very Japanese conversation with somebody. And it's surprisingly enough, Hyrule Warriors kind of surprised me. That's why it's my surprise hit of the year. It's a Wii U exclusive.
So with Hyrule Warriors, did that pull you in just strictly because it was a Zelda skin on top of a game like that? Like, is that really what made it so great for you and made you want to play some more, is because it was, you know, Zelda and we're big, huge Zelda fanboys and girls here?
Yeah, it's definitely the Zeldification of Hyrule Warriors. I have no, or sorry, of Dynasty Warriors. Oh, gosh. I have no interest in going out to play Dynasty Warrior games still. I would love a Hyrule Warriors 2, don't get me wrong. But it is strictly like the Zelda sort of aspect, the way the heroes work, the powers that I recognize from like my favorite games across the last, well, my entire life. Like, it pulls characters in from Ocarina of Time all the way up to Skyward Sword. It's really cool. Really cool.
Well, for me, my surprise hit of the year, which I don't really know why it was such a surprise, but Stick of Truth, man, that was a fun, fun title. I was going through Steam and I was looking at the amount of time that I spent in things, because I really felt this year like I hadn't played a lot. I spent so much time in Smite, Warcraft, and Hearthstone that I was just like, I haven't played like anything else. And then I'm like, oh, you've played like 15 hours of Don't Starve. You've played 30 hours of Stick of Truth. I was like, really?
Nice.
I totally don't remember sinking that much time into it. But I mean, like, it was spot on with what I was expecting in terms of like South Park humor, and obviously it's one of my favorite TV shows ever. So I think it really, really nailed it. It gave me everything that I wanted. I had really low expectations because of everything that they'd done in terms of like delays and just kind of some of the things that I'd seen from the creators saying like, oh yeah, we can totally make a video game. Yeah. How hard can it be? And I was like, oh no.
Well, it's also like the visuals of the game. Like the trailer's like, yeah, that looks like I'm watching South Park, but there's no way it's going to play like that. And then it does.
Exactly.
And the humor plays like the show, and the interactive bits play like the show too. Like, it feels like you're a character in the show and you're controlling your dude. And I've played a minimal amount, but from what I have played, like, it's the show. I mean, you could stop watching
but
the show.
It's a video game. It's like two of my favorite things, South Park and a video game, and it's smooshed together and it's awesome. So that was, it really couldn't have been better. And definitely was a surprising hit that I sunk so much time into that I couldn't put it down. I mean, there were dildos. It was hilarious. I ran around smacking people with a dildo for a while before I found a better weapon. And I'm just like, you know what? South Park, you win.
Anybody that tricks you into using a dildo on a daily basis
exactly
gets a surprise hit from me. That came out a lot worse than I was not hoping for that.
Oh my god. I love that this is literally the first award. We are 10 minutes into the show.
It's happening.
And you've already made me totally lose my shit.
Sorry. Well, South Park. Oh, Leo, I saw that bit, and that's not cool. We won't even repeat that on this. He's still talking about Stick of Truth.
Okay, so
I need to play that game, evidently.
Obviously, although South Park had a really, really, really funny, great South Parky story, it wasn't the best story of the year. For me, best story was hands down Wolf Among Us. Mm. It was so good. And watching Bigby kind of go through his kind of transition from this, like, you know, the bad wolf to the good guy sort of thing, but still being gritty and, you know, just, I love just the Fable universe. So best story for me this year was Wolf Among Us. It was, you know, I played it as soon as the next episode came out. I was way into it, absolutely loved it. And there were a ton of great games this year, but story-wise, Wolf Among Us topped them all. What about you? What did you think for a story?
Wolf Among Us was a really close contender. I feel like it lost a few points for me because of the episodic nature of it. Like, there was one, that one episode was just, if you played it episodes 1 through 5, you could power through that really shitty episode where it was only like 45 minutes and nothing happened except for the very end.
Which one was that?
I think it was
Was it four?
I think it was four.
I think you're right.
Which, it was one of the later ones in the later half. And again, like, the story for Wolf Among Us is great, but if played episodically, it was tough. But close second to what was my pick was Dragon Age Inquisition. It shouldn't come as a surprise to people that I'm picking a BioWare game for best story. They always do a great story. And when you look at Dragon Age, it's 200-hour plus game. It's longer than 2 hours. You look at that story stretched that far, and the stuff they address from previous games is really good. The stuff they sort of sew in there to kind of be like, this is happening because of the story, and you'll either address this in DLC or in the sequel or whatever. It really sets that stuff up really well, and it all comes to a satisfying conclusion while still giving you that, whoa, what a twist, you know, like kind of furthering the story. Like, whereas mm-hmm. the other Dragon Age games were always like, they walked away happily ever after, you know, it was always finite in concluding, but you're always kind of like, yeah, I'm done. And you put it away and you wait like 3 or 4 years. But this, it's like, oh man, I want to know what else is happening in the world. And you can mm-hmm. certainly jump back in and experience all the other story. It still works. And I don't know. I really dug the story they were telling, and all the character stories, just so much story in that game. You could always find something to enjoy.
Well, and that kind of like leads really well into our next award this year, which is favorite moment. And mm-hmm. so we could possibly have spoilers, but we're going to try really, really hard not to spoil anything for either one of our picks. But the reason that I say that is, Ryan, you picked Dragon Age for your favorite moment too. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us about that?
So I did hint at the ending for Dragon Age. I'm not going to spoil it because I think it's something you really need to experience on your own. Not just the listeners, but also you, Jocelyn, I think.
Yeah, if you spoil it for me now, I will come through the internet at you, because seriously, you finally convinced me to buy the freaking game.
Oh, did you buy it?
I installed it, but I haven't played it yet. And if you now spoil the ending,
I would never do that.
Through the internet.
basically, the ending, I'm not going to spoil it, and I'm not even going to describe it in a way that that would allow you to be like to see it
to
coming,
figure it out,
or to figure it out. Or so I think the ending is really cool, because what it does is it concludes the event of the story, and you're kind of like, and you're happy with that. But there's some things happening that you're not really sure. They're really confusing. And post credits, there's a scene that kind of like sets up further adventures in sequels, DLC, whatever BioWare wants to do. It's an EA game. I'm sure it'll be both. And that's really cool, but it's not like the end of a RoboCop film where the bad guy like sticks his hand out of the ground and it's like, da da da, he's back. You didn't actually kill him. It's not like that, where it's like, oh, the sequel's going to be like basically, oh, you're going to kill him again. No, the ending kind of like, it sets up a lore, like it changes the lore drastically of the world of different factions in the game. Like from the beginning to the end, you're dealing with this force, and once you finally conquer that force, groups of factions have changed. Like the Templars aren't the same, the mages aren't the same, the Grey Wardens aren't the same. That's one of the beauties of Dragon Age, is that there's multiple factions that each have their own distinct responsibilities, stuff like that. So at the end, that changes drastically, and there's a lot of things. It's not just the post credits ending, but that is a major one, and it's definitely one of those like, I have to Google this because it's so lorey, if that's a word. I know it's a word. Our British friends are what? He went to the boat?
It's really funny, though, when you say, like, I have to Google this, because that was exactly what happened when we finished Mass Effect, too. It's like, we finished Mass Effect, we watched it, we were just like, to the internets! Like, what the hell just happened?
It's so rich in lore, and Dragon Age is a very rich in lore game, and you can ignore that, and you can just play it and have fun if you're not into like the deep fantasy stuff. But if you're into the deep fantasy stuff and you read the codexes, you read the constant barrage of text that pops up, and sometimes I don't, and you're going to miss a lot, because the ending really serves those people who have been paying attention, you know? So that's the reason it's my favorite moment, because at the end I was like, wow, whoa, what the... Where's my iPad? You know? Yeah. And I had to read, like, I don't know, like 20 pages of articles trying to figure out what the hell I just watched. And then like, oh, now I'm even more excited, you know? So I, just like Mass Effect 3, I'm going to be constantly paying attention to BioWare to see when we're going to be getting more Dragon Age Inquisition, because they have announced there's going to be DLC. They're not selling a season pass, but boy howdy, I'm sure EA is going to make them. So I'd expect to hear more on that in the coming months, and I can't wait. So what's your favorite moment of this year, 2014? I guess last year's year.
Yes, last year's. Yes, because we're actually in 2015, which hasn't happened yet. Normally we do our game of the year in the actual year, but, you know, whatevs. So for me, and it's probably no surprise to anyone who's been following the show for a while, but my favorite moment this year came from Warlords. And I've now made it all the way through Nigrand, which is where they kind of tie up the main storyline in Warlords, at least for now, for the time being, kind of like everything that was left over at the end of Mists. So I don't want to spoil anything because I know there's a lot of people that still haven't made it all the way through that content, but the end cinematic in Warlords is just such a culmination of so many things. It brings a lot of stuff together, and it goes in a direction that you don't necessarily think it's going to. And it was really, really, really satisfying to me and shocking at the same time. So I loved it so much. And to the point that I'd been trying to power level through because I had people I wanted to play dungeons with and PvP with and stuff. So I was actually on a call with friends just, you know, chatting while I leveled and everything else. And I hit this cinematic and it kind of started because they had said, you know, oh, let us know when you hit the cinematic because, you know, we don't want to talk over it. And so it starts and I was like, oh, okay, guys, cinematic. And they were still talking. And I was like, no, dude, I'm like, shut up. And then I'm watching it. And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. What? Oh, my God. And they're just like, are you okay? And I'm like, oh, my God. And they're like, yeah, we know.
Well, I have not hit this point. I'm close. I'm like 4 levels away. So I'm running to Nigrand as we speak. So if I'm quiet later on, you know what I'm doing. I'm trying
that's
to
that's why, yeah.
But that's interesting. And Warlords of Draenor has probably been the best World of Warcraft I've played in the last 10 years of playing World of Warcraft.
It was really, really good. And I find, for me at least, I've always really missed out on the story of Warcraft in general because I came into it so late. I didn't do raiding until the very, very end of Mists. So I've just missed out on all of that main storyline content. And then so in Warlords, it just seemed like they had a story. They showed you the story. You got it through questing. It was almost impossible to miss it, you know, like you couldn't miss it because it was right there in your face. It was really obvious and it was great. And I find that they took what happened in Mists, which felt a little bit janky. They had a really good transition into the story with the War Crimes book. And then it goes from there and they run with it. And it's so good and so refreshing because it's such a change from the way that Warcraft has done it in the past. Mm-hmm. That for it to culminate the way that it did was just my 100% favorite moment in gaming for me this year.
Cool. Well, I can't wait to get there.
I know. It's going to be so good. Mm-hmm. So that brings us – actually, we skipped a category because it was so easy to transition from one Dragon Age to another. So we'll run back up here to the best-looking game of 2014. So for me, I picked one that wasn't necessarily graphically intense because it was a year really of everybody pushing the limits. Like when Shadows of Mordor and there was another one that came out right around the same time, might have actually been Dragon Age. When they came out with the like minimum specs, everyone just freaked out because it was crazy. It was graphically intensive. You know, everything looked so pretty. There's all these great textures and colors and everything else. But everyone was kind of like pushing the same envelope, I felt like.
A lot of browns.
So for me, I actually thought the best looking game this year was Monument Valley because it was not necessarily graphically crazy, but it's the mobile game that's kind of very Escher-esque. Mm-hmm. And it just, it was so different and kind of mind-bending, the same sort of way that Portal was mind-bending, and you had to start to learn to think with portals. You had to start to learn to think with, like, crazy, like, weird passing
upside down
and stuff.
Staircases.
Upside downing, yeah. And staircases and everything, yeah.
No, that game, it's one of those few games this year that uses its visuals to impact its gameplay, you know? There's
exactly.
A lot of moments. It's not just like the staircases, it's also like the rotating, like, Rube Goldberg puzzle type shit. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. And the DLC they added, you know, don't be afraid to spend a little money on some iOS titles, folks, because that game is worth, I think, $5? Plus the $2 for the expansion, I could be wrong.
I think so, something like that. And I think we've touched on this at different points before in the show. And I love paying money for iOS games. And yes. I know that a lot of people are probably going to be like, what? But I love paying money because generally you get rid of ads, you get really good gameplay, you support developers. And I would rather do that than have things put behind paywalls and, you know, have games nickel and dime me the whole way along. Like, just charge me $10 and have that just be the game.
You spend less time trying to have fun, mm-hmm. you know? Or, yeah, less time. You might spend less money. Like, you look at a lot of free play games, you're spending next to no money if you're doing it that way. If you're spending money, that's fine too. But you're also just spending a hell of a lot more time just trying to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, look at any free to play game and, you know, I've just broken the glass for you. You'll never enjoy one again. Sorry.
That's fine. Uh-oh. But yeah, so for me, it was Monument Valley. But what about you, Ryan? What did you pick for your best-looking game of the year?
I went in the same direction as you. I didn't choose... Like, I played a lot of, like, high-end games on, like, the PS4 and the PC, like Dragon Age. Very beautiful game. But I want best-looking to be, like, what was the best-looking game for me? And that had to be Mario Kart 8 on the Wii U.
I just played that for the first time on New Year's Eve, so...
Nice.
Man, was it fun.
Yeah, it's a stellar game. And if you play some of the... The reason I chose it, I was going through the DLC levels, and there's a level based on Zelda, and there's a level based on F-Zero. And those
I
are the two...
I love that Zelda one.
Isn't it great?
So good.
It just... It really shows that Nintendo hardware is best used by Nintendo developers, which is both a great thing and both kind of an unfortunate thing. I don't think I've ever seen a third-party game quite nail the graphics on a Nintendo platform as well as Nintendo does. And I mean, there are obvious reasons behind that, but with Mario Kart 8, it's 60 frames per second, it's 1080p, Mario's mustache is literally, like, moving in the wind.
Blowing
in the wind, and, you know, it just looks fantastic. You could watch somebody play that game, and you're actually getting more out of it than the person playing, because they're focused on racing, and you get to see, like, all the extra stuff happening.
All the stuff going on. Yeah. I think, for me... What I noticed the most when I was playing Mario Kart 8 was that the levels that had been, like, redone, remastered, or were inspired by previous Mario Karts. So, yeah. You know, like, there's somewhere you're going through the desert. There's I can't remember. I think there was a snow one.
There's a couple snow ones, yeah.
Yeah, and you're going through and you're like, oh my god, like this feels like my hands know where to go already. Like, what's going on? And then you realize, oh wait, this is actually based on that level from 64 or from, you know, whatever. And it's so much fun, and you realize how much they've done and how far they've come when you start to recognize those different tracks. So yeah. I can see best looking for Mario Kart 8. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that kind of leads into our next category, which is most improved games. So we talked about, you know, Mario Kart tracks being improved from previous iterations. But for me, and actually this is one of the only categories, really, that we agree on.
Well, no, you spoke too soon.
Oh, well, I know. There's two or three throughout the night. But this one, we both agree, because it really... turned the game into something completely new and completely different. And when it first came out, it was something that I kind of got into, played for a week. It was kind of cool and fun and different, and everyone was freaking out about it and really just totally fanboying out.
Yeah.
And I jumped in, I tried it, and I was kind of like, okay, meh. And then when this patch came out, Oh my god, totally new game, way better, couldn't put it down, played it forever. Like, I mean, god, it was probably like 6 weeks there where it was like, Diablo, 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 Diablo. No spoilers, guys, we're talking about Diablo and Loot 2.0.
Yeah, it was the pre-Smite, Smite, 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 you know, like...
Exactly.
We even played it, like, the expansion was coming out, they come out with this Loot 2.0, and I was right there with you. I played Diablo 3 for the story and because it was a Blizzard game, and then didn't touch it again. Until Loot 2.0, when that patch hit, I think that was our game of, like, the game we played. You know, if we all wanted to play let's play Loot 2.0. And then when Reaper of Souls hit, let's rush through the campaign so we can, you know, start doing adventure mode and portals and all that fun stuff. But yeah, like, just, it certainly deserves the, like, 2.0... A lot of people, like, attach numbers to things, but that 2.0 thing... It's one of the first times I've seen someone do it, and it actually makes sense. Absolutely. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that Diablo 3 was our Smite before Smite. So best multiplayer game of the year, we actually both, this is another category we agree on, we both gave it to Smite. And I don't think that there's any question that the multiplayer in Smite is so much fun. And we've played that for every single game night since, like, what, October? Maybe before that?
Yeah.
It's something that we love playing no matter who we're playing with. And, I mean, you can jump in with two people, up to five. And, I mean, even...
We did an eight-person
game night the other night. Yeah. We did a custom game, and we had, like, 10 people playing, and it was a blast.
Yeah.
And it just keeps us coming back.
Yeah, and for me, and I think for you as well, it's one of the first MOBAs I've ever truly, I enjoy them all the ones I've played, but this was the first one that actually hooked me, where I actually want to play more and keep playing. And the reason I gave it best multiplayer is because the only reason I play it is because I want to play with other people. I don't usually jump in there and play on my own, but...
Never play on my own. Yeah. I always grab at least one other person, and we know enough people now that love Smite that there's always someone around who wants to play.
Yeah, and if anybody else wants to play with us, like we did mention, we usually play pretty much every game night, which is part of our Patreon thing. But if you want to join the clan, we have a clan. We have the A-Move clan, right?
We do, yeah. So, and actually... One thing I'm going to say, because I seem to get a lot of random friend requests, and I love each and every one of you who sends me friend requests, but when you do, shoot me a message and be like, hey, this is so-and-so from such-and-such, and I found you like this. Because, like, I can't keep everybody on my friends list straight now, which is a problem I find across platforms, but I can make little notes, so you just have to send me messages and let me know. So when you see me online, be like, hey, and this is who I am.
Do it.
Especially when people have different tags, like, because there's... usually different Twitter handles from Twitch channel type stuff to in other games. And some people I know by their character name in WoW that are now over in Smite and they're a totally different name again. And I'm just like, I can't keep track of you. I can't keep track. So yeah, we're having a ton of fun in Smite. So obviously best multiplayer. Now this next category, and I think I say this every single year, but this is the Ryan category. This is the Jocelyn doesn't pay attention to it at all and always picks the Warcraft titles because, you know, it's just easy. And not to mention that Russell Brower is an absolute genius and very, very nice man.
Yes,
met him this year. He's awesome. But best music, best soundtrack for me. Warlords. So we're not even going to talk about that because it's pretty much default for me.
Yeah.
Ryan, what is your best soundtrack?
Warlords of Draenor is a very good soundtrack and definitely like one of my top five this year, if not top three. But and I hate like
the fact that you even have a top five means that you're paying way more attention than I am.
I love video game music. I love listening. Like when I'm not listening to podcasts, I'm usually like. If I'm trying to like really focus, I'm listening to some orchestral stuff from a video game. And one of my favorite developers is Bungie. And one of my favorite video game composers is Marty O'Donnell, who does all of, or I guess used to do all of their music before he was fired or let go, or depending on what Kotaku article you read. But Destiny is my best soundtrack. And it's probably one of the best things about that game. Probably one of the few things that are good about that game, but the soundtrack's fantastic. It is totally a Marty O'Donnell, and plus I can't remember his counterpart or whoever he works with every album. But That soundtrack's fantastic. It totally sounds like a Bungie soundtrack. And I really don't know what to expect with Destiny 2 or whatever they're calling it when they don't have him there to do the soundtrack. I'm actually not really sure what's going to happen, but I've listened to that soundtrack more than I've played that game, and this time it is because of the quality. The soundtrack is far better than that game. It's fantastic, though. Even if you haven't played Destiny, you should definitely check out that soundtrack. It's really cool. Definitely check out Warlords of Draenor as well. It's a really slick soundtrack, for sure.
I really like all of the Warcraft music. It's pretty much the only game that I leave the music on for. Mm-hmm. Most other times, I kind of get sick of the music, and I throw my own stuff on, or I throw on a podcast, or whatever. But I always, always, always keep the music on in Warlords, because or in Warcraft, because I feel like it really does a good job of setting the scene. So,
yeah.
But speaking of Warlords, which is kind of like DLC or an expansion or whatever. I guess it is an expansion, but best DLC of the year. Mm-hmm. For me, actually, it was Don't Starve. I've sunk so much time into that game. And so there was Reign of Giants that came out this year. And I'm not going to count it because it only came out, I guess, what was it, Tuesday or Wednesday last week? It was pretty much like New Year's Eve that Don't Starve Together came out in beta form. Oh. So I'm not counting that as DLC with Don't Starve. I'm just counting Reign of Giants. And it was a huge, huge change to the gameplay. There were a lot of things that happened in Reign of Giants that scared the shit out of me, that I was just like, I'm running around doing all the things I normally do, and all of a sudden there's like some big crazy thing that happens, and I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? So lots of really cool moments that came out of that expansion or DLC or whatever you want to call it. So Don't Starve was definitely mine.
I picked up both Together and Reign of Giants on the sale. Now, does Together take into effect Reign of Giants, or is that just like Don't Starve proper?
No, I think it's basically Don't Starve and Reign of Giants. I think all that content is available to you in Don't Starve Together, because one of the big things that Reign of Giants did was brought weather into the equation. So, you know, you get rained on, and when you get rained on, you get, you know, wet and upset, because one of the things that you have to manage in Don't Starve is your sanity. Mm-hmm. And when your sanity starts to go down, then you have, you know, monsters that start appearing, and it's, yeah, so weather is something that came in with Reign of Giants, and that's available in Don't Starve Together, so.
Cool. I need to try that.
So what about you? What was your favorite DLC this year?
This year was light on DLC.
It really, really was. I was thinking that, too. Like, I was talking to Josh, and we were kind of going over stuff that we played this year and mm-hmm. what was DLC, and there wasn't too much.
Yeah, there was a lot of finishing up DLC in the early part of the year. There was the second part of Burial at Sea, I think, was this year.
Was that this year?
Yeah, I think the second part. Again, like
BioShock seems like it was so long ago.
Yes, it does.
And I never even played Burial at Sea.
Oh, it's totally worth it, especially if you're a big fan of the original BioShock.
Oh, God, I love that game.
You should probably... Well, it's too late now, but that game probably was super on sale, like not even a week ago. But I did not pick Burial at Sea. I noticed that there wasn't a lot of DLC, and a lot of the DLC that I did play really did not even come close to what I picked was The Last of Us Left Behind. It was sort of the expansion to The Last of Us, a new two-hour sort of prequel / side story to The Last of Us game that came out a couple years ago.
Yeah, I just bought a PS4 actually over the holidays as part of one of the bundle sale things, and it came with Last of Us, so I haven't played it yet because it's not actually technically here. Sure. But as soon as it gets here, that's what I'm going to be doing, is booting up Last of Us, because I mean, God, the amount that everyone has talked about it, it's just like, oh my God, Last of Us, best thing ever. And I'm like, okay, I need to get in on this.
It's a really great game, and the beauty of the PS4 version is that it includes Left Behind. You don't even have to go out and buy it. You'll have it. Do not play it before you play the original game, because it does contain spoilers.
Spoilers? I don't know what those spoilers
are. Yeah, thank you.
Making up words.
Yeah, well, I do that often. But Left Behind introduces you to a character that is referenced in the main game, which is... I think her name's Ellie. I can't even remember her name. It's been so long, but I think it's Ellie's best friend and their interactions and their relationship. But the side story takes place in what I'll say is kind of like a time jump. That's not a spoiler. That's just like something happens and then it's like 2 weeks later and they arrive at somewhere and there's that chunk of time that is not, it's boring gameplay, right? So they skip over it. And that's actually a point to be made, is that half of this expansion is really interesting and really story driven and really cool. And then the other half of the expansion is very combat heavy, which is the side story. It's very combat heavy, not much stories going on. So if you weren't a fan of the combat in Last of Us, you're going to love half of my pick and hate the other half. But if you loved everything about The Last of Us like I did, you really enjoyed this DLC, which is why it's my best DLC this year.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So to wrap up kind of our first half of our Game of the Year episode right now is we are going to talk about what the biggest news of the year was in the gamer world. So mm-hmm. I think, Ryan, we should probably start with you because I feel like mine could maybe possibly go on for a bit. So
sure.
What was your newsmaker of the year this year in the world of gaming?
This was more of a problem in the sort of last couple months, with the big holiday releases, but it was broken games are broken. I was just really disheartened to hear about like Assassin's Creed Unity, Halo Master Chief Collection. I had to slow myself down there a little bit. And that was really depressing because I was hoping that game would have been my reason to go pick up an Xbox One, and it was just terribly broken. And there's a lot of games that suffered that issue. And it's just really sad that when these games have these huge story-ending issues or multiplayer-ending issues, some of them even get like swept under the rug. Like, yeah, Assassin's Creed was heavily marketed as a very broken game by a lot of outlets. And same with Master Chief Collection. But there are games we've already talked about on this list, like Dragon Age Inquisition, which I actually had issues with. It didn't change. It doesn't affect my choice because I still really enjoyed the game. But it was still frustrating to see these little inconsistencies that you would hope they would catch. You know, like mm-hmm. things that I know they're big games, and you know there's a lot of people working on them, and it's almost impossible to catch everything. But
at the same time, I mean, when glitches and things happen and mm-hmm. it's part of the main story, it's just like, did any of you actually take the time to play through your own game? Or did you all just have your little teams working on your little things and then you smooshed it all together and then you shipped it?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like, especially in the case of games like Call of Duty and, not Last of Us, sorry, Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have an iteration once every freaking year and they're shipping these huge AAA titles, it's just like, are you even trying? Like, are you even doing your QA stuff? Are you playing your own game? Are you seeing if it makes sense? Like, are there holes? Are there glitches? Because some of these things, it's just like, your dudes have no faces. Like, did you not even try it on older systems to find out what the minimum specs would be? It just, it feels like there's these big, huge things that happen. They're reported on within the first 24 hours of a launch. And it's just like, if you tried your game, maybe you would have found these things.
Yeah, and there are a few developers out there that really put a huge 100% effort into making sure these things are spotless on release. Like Blizzard, Nintendo, Naughty Dog, I've never had an issue with them. Those are the guys behind The Last of Us. You know, BioWare, they're making huge games, so they do their best, and I can't really fault them on that, but there are a few things that happen. And we're not even talking about games that, you know, they make promises, and then when they launch, they're just not even remotely close
mm-hmm.
To what was promised or what was advertised.
No, this is just coverage. Fully, like, whatever they launched is just broken and crappy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that is a whole separate issue, but yeah. Broken games are broken. Avoid Assassin's Creed like the plague. It's better now. But,
well,
it's not better now. They put faces on everybody. It's really weird, actually, seeing that game with everybody with faces. It's not very fun.
And if you guys don't know what we're talking about, you should totally Google Assassin's Creed and no faces and look at those images.
It was like our featured art on the show for 2 weeks.
It was. That's true. A few weeks ago, it was our featured art. And it makes me laugh so much.
It's so creepy.
I loved all those screenshots.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, and I think the gaming community at large, really, the newsmaker of the year for not in a good way was Gamergate and everything that happened in and around that. And it was just, it was going on for so long. I mean, it's still going on. There's still a ton of people using the hashtag. And it just kind of, regardless of how it started, really devolved into this just horrible cesspool of awfulness on both sides. I'm not saying, you know, one side is worse than the other. Like, there are really bad things being said on both sides of the argument. And it started off as, and see, this is the thing. For those of you that haven't, there is a really, really, really fantastic article written by Patrick Beja. And he kind of goes over everything that happened in and around Gamergate and what the what the movement is, and, you know, how essentially you can't label the movement because they have no central leadership. So you can't say Gamergate is or isn't about any one topic, because it's basically just a whole bunch of people using the same hashtag. And some of those people are truly awful, misogynistic, terrible people. Some people are legitimately worried about the state of journalism in gaming. And so you can't really say that it is or isn't about either one of those things, because there is no central, what's the word I'm looking for? Manifesto.
Sure.
So I think that for me, Newsmaker of the Year was clearly this, because, I mean, Gamergate made it into mainstream news. This wasn't even just something that was, you know, confined to the IGNs and the Kotakus and the Polygons of the world. This made it, like, to the point that, you know, my mom called me and said, hey, there's men threatening women who play games online. It's this, like, Gamergate thing? Have you heard of that? Are you okay? And I'm like, yes, Mom, I'm fine, but thank you for worrying about my internet life. I love it. But so the fact that she saw it on her evening news just kind of shows that, you know, this was a big issue. This was something that people were talking about. It was the news in gaming this year. And I mean, it was, it started back in, I want to say back in the summer. This was like way back in like July.
It hit big in the summer. And it, one thing that really just makes me angry about Gamergate is that it's the first time I've ever been depressed when thinking about video games. Like, video games are supposed to be fun. You know, even if I'm playing a really sad game, at some level, I'm still enjoying it because it's making me feel emotions. But Gamergate is just like, really? Like, this is what we're going to do? Like, you know, if journalism is not that, if there's a problem with the game journalism, you know, there's this great thing you can do, like stop paying attention to that certain person or outlet. You don't need to attack them. You don't need to, you know, death threats. Like, death threats for anything don't make any sense whatsoever. You know,
yeah,
it really doesn't make sense to me. And
well, and that's the thing is, it devolved into, you know, these terrible, terrible, terrible things being said on both sides, and then these actions being taken against these women who spoke out against this movement. And it's just been so horrible. And probably the worst part of all of it is that when this part of the Gamergate movement started threatening and doxing and doing all of that just horrible stuff to these women, people were so scared to speak out because they thought the same thing was going to happen to them, that a lot of these women ended up just standing completely alone. And that hurts me a lot. Like, that sucks. And I'm one of the people who didn't really speak out, who didn't say anything, because, you know, the one or two times I interacted with somebody from the Gamergate movement, it was terrifying. Because I'm just like, you're attacking me right now, and I haven't really even said anything that is even remotely extreme. You know, like, and I try really, really hard to be level-headed and moderate. And that's, neither side likes that.
Well, the funny thing is that as soon as you show hostility or any sort of anger towards another person who has a differing opinion, that's when your opinion becomes null and void. Because I've never, like, you can have an opinion that vastly differs from somebody else, but as soon as you threaten to get physical or it's like caveman mentality, like, oh, your fire sucks. It's like, no, your fire sucks. I'm going to beat you over the head with this stick or this dildo if we want to make it funny again. It doesn't matter whose fire is bigger or whose fire is more orange. It still causes heat. It's still awesome. They're both awesome fires. Let's just enjoy the fire, people. No, that's bad. Can't we all just play video games and have fun? And
yeah,
like, does it really matter who you're playing with? Like, it doesn't matter. Just have fun. And I cannot see how being that negative and that mob attacky death threat bullshit
aggressive.
Thank you. I chose to get wordy and it backfired immediately. Yeah. You're not having fun doing that. You're not enjoying your probably one of the greatest hobbies available on this here planet Earth. I don't understand it whatsoever. It confuses the crap out of me.
Yeah. So I really think, and I mean, it's the kind of thing that I think everyone thought was just going to go away, and it didn't just go away. So then you kind of got to the point where the argument with the original participants was just so heated and so negative and so crazy that you're just like, well, now do I even want to step in between these things? Mm-hmm. Because, it's just you could get blindsided by either side and, labeled. And I mean, there was even some tweets that I saw from, and I'm not going to name names, But Patrick was tweeting right around the time that he wrote his article, and he was attacked from both sides, from people that I thought were moderate, but just, said crazy, crazy things. And I'm just like, Patrick is agreeing with you right now. Why are you acting like this and just going on the offensive or defensive either way, just like that? It's just like, no, take a second. And think about these arguments and think about what's being said and maybe don't jump to conclusions about things and what you think that this person is talking about. Like, you can be pro some things and against other things and have totally rational arguments and all of that kind of stuff. And it's just like, for whatever reason, this just totally exploded and went way crazy. So that for me is my newsmaker of 2014 for better or worse, that was it.
it was big, and I think probably the reason I didn't choose it is because I really did not like that. I don't know. That's a big one for sure. It was.
Yeah.
It's been a shitty year for stuff like that, unfortunately.
Yeah. So that pretty much wraps up our first part of our Game of the Year episode. So I just wanted to remind everybody that Ryan and I really appreciate your continued support of our show, along with our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. You can use the code THEGAMERSIN to double your RAM when you purchase a new gaming rig. Head on over to DoghouseSystems.com and get your order on. So this is really our kind of big overarching awards in terms of Game of the Year. So first off, we've got our most disappointing Game of the Year. And I think, Ryan, I think yours is kind of... I don't want to say obvious, but definitely something that a lot of gamers agree on this year is the most disappointing title. So what did you pick?
As hinted to in our previous topic or previous segment, Destiny. I love Bungie, all their Halo games. I've played them all. I was really looking forward to their first stab at next gen, their first stab at new content, new story, under their own belt, like not necessarily with the Microsoft umbrella. They're sort of doing their own thing. They own their IP. They're happy, so hopefully, with doing this. And what came out was kind of a an MMO without any content. What I experienced, like, the story was all ripped out. Peter Dinklage just, man, they need to hire a better...
the Peter Dinklage conversation.
Like,
he's so good, but in this, he's so bad.
Yeah, like, there was a meme in beta when it was like, that wizard came from the moon, and everybody made fun of it, and this was before the game launched, like 3 or 4 months, and Bungie's like, oh, we're going to do another recording. This is just alpha stuff. This is very basic. Like, we just had him in to record a few lines, and he left. He went to Game of Thrones or something. And they didn't. That must have been a lie, because the VO on the rest of it is the same stuff. I know he's supposed to be... The argument some people make is he's a robot, he's an AI, he's supposed to sound like that. No, if you ever played the other Halo games, you realize that the same developer created a character that had that played the same purpose, Guilty Spark 343, who has a personality, who does not sound like a Dinklage robot, you know? So that, and that's not even the worst. Like, the gunplay is great, but there's, when there's no story there, you immediately just be like, I can't keep playing, even though the gameplay is pretty stellar. The story's not there, and that's mm-hmm. why I like to play Bungie games. And I know the story is, like, you could go read a Wikipedia article, or, like, Bungie actually created their own version of Wikipedia for Destiny because they tore all the story out of the game and put it into these fucking grimoire cards. Like, I don't want to go read them. I want to play your story.
You want experience, yeah.
Like, it's just, and you know what? I have faith that Destiny 2 will be the Destiny we wanted. The only problem is it'll be like 3 or 4 years too late.
Yeah, I was going to say, because didn't they, was Destiny the game that originally they said they wanted it to have like a 10-year cycle or something like that? Like, they wanted it basically to be the next WoW. And
yeah. They want it to be, they have a 10-year plan for games. Like, they're not doing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought that they just had like a 10-year thing where were like, Destiny, this one game is going to be our 10-year thing. And I'm like, don't aim for that. It happened to WoW by accident. It doesn't mean that that's what you should go for.
There's two expansions coming out. The one already came out in December, did not fix a single thing, did not add any extra story that fixed the first part of the game. And then there's another expansion coming out in the spring. And then theoretically at E3, we're going to get Destiny 2. And then, you know, it's just, I don't get it. I don't know what happened. Like, the game just looked like, when they were talking about it, when they were showing it, it had potential. And when Halo 5 is looking like it's going to eclipse Bungie's offering proper of Destiny, it's a weird world we're living in right now. It's really weird. And I was really disappointed with Destiny.
For me, it was Sims 4, because that game felt so stripped down to nothing. Like, I mean, Sims 3 was so great, and they almost made it open world. You could, you know, walk over to your neighbors. There was a ton of different expansions. The expansions came out really quickly. There were tons of things to do. You could explore, like, Egypt and Paris, and it was just really, really rich. And then, so they come out with Sims 4, and I was looking forward to it because it's more Sims, and I've played Sims since it first came out. And they just, there was no functionality, even simple, simple things like the freaking, chat room saying, have you forgotten SimCity? SimCity wasn't this year, right?
I think it was last year.
It was last year, yeah. Okay, good. I was like, whoa, did I actually forget SimCity? No, okay. Sims 4, because I was going to say SimCity would totally, totally fix Sims 4. They would just bump it right out of that category. Hmm. But no, Sims 4, it was just like they had some functionality that they'd had since original Sims that just wasn't in Sims 4. And it didn't feel like they rushed it out, because it wasn't like Sims 3 came out last year. But it just felt like they didn't do anything except for strip a bunch of stuff down. And right. Even the character models, that was the thing that I knew going in that it wasn't going to change much. But they've always had such problems with character models. And that's their entire game, is characters. Like, you build your character. That takes hours in some cases. And then you go and you live a life. You simulate being a person. And then they couldn't even do that? Oh, my God. I think I played it for a total of, like, an hour and a half and went, what the actual fuck?
Yeah.
Done.
It's interesting. Like, when you create a sequel that has a game like The Sims, or a sports game is another great example, where there are these standard features that people come to expect. You know, like, it's the same argument people have with, like, Smash Brothers. Like, they come to expect the same roster or equivalent roster from previous games. And if they don't, that's a cut in features that we just do not want to hear about. And when I read that Sims 4 was adding pools in a future patch,
right?
At first I was like, well, pools, I mean, I get it, like, wanting to have pools, but it's also like, But really, guys, you couldn't put pools in? I mean, maybe they've spent too much time working on that Katy Perry expansion. I don't know. But
which, to be fair, that is like the one I don't own.
I'm not making fun of you. I'm judgy. I'm making fun of EA.
Don't have Katy Perry expansion.
Hey, if you want to, I love Fireworks. It's the best song that out there right now. But I think that when you release a sequel to a game like The Sims, you need to make sure that you're adding, not taking away. And when you aren't taking away, you're taking away for good reason. Yeah. And when you patch in pools, that's not a good reason, because obviously you're just like, well, we got to ship this on whatever date that matches our marketing, because, exactly, you know, 9, 10, 11 was a really cool year date combination, so we had to come out with it.
Exactly.
And I know that this isn't 2011, but
I get your point. Basically, yes. If you have a cool launch day, or you've been, you know, like, nobody likes to see delays, and so they're just so stripped down. And Josh in the chat room is saying that, you know, it feels like a good kit to build a game on, but I don't want a kit. I want a game. Like, I was promised The Sims 4, and I got building blocks. Like, no, mm-hmm. Disappointing.
Sounds like a hiccup fart. Those are dangerous.
Very, very dangerous. So let's just roll this into a more positive space.
Yes.
Now. We're done with disappointments. We're going on to the best on-the-go game of the year. So talking like mobile gaming, for me, it was iOS gaming with Threes. Mm-hmm. I remember I told the story that I had my headphones in and I was listening to a podcast and I was sitting there playing Threes. And not only did I miss my bus stop, but I actually made it all the way to the end of the line and the bus had actually pulled over. Everybody else had gotten off the bus. This is a public transit bus. And I had actually, the bus had pulled over and the driver had to come up to me and be like, can you get off the bus now? And I was like, well, I'm going to be late for work.
Also, what city am I in?
Exactly. Yeah. Where am I right now? Because
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, Threes is a solid pick. I played a lot of iOS games and a lot of 3DS games, but my pick for on the go had to be Super Smash Brothers on the 3DS. Not only because I liked playing it on the go, but also because I never really thought they would be able to translate what has been solely a console experience onto a handheld. And I love playing games on my iPad, my iPhone, when I'm like in the car or on the bus. But when it comes to handheld gaming, I still think like Nintendo's the king. Like, they're still developing these awesome titles that I can play wherever I want. I don't have to have internet connection. I don't have to pair my phone with my iPad so I can play Hearthstone on the bus. Like, that's just so
cool. Which is something I also did a lot of this
yeah.
year. And
yeah.
chat room's freaking out right now. Barbecue Master in the chat room is like, what, not Hearthstone? We will talk about why Hearthstone is not on the go game of the year later, but
sure. Well, yeah, like
actually, you know what? Let's talk about it now.
Okay.
Because that was something that actually ticked me off a little bit.
Oh.
So Hearthstone is a phenomenal game. Clearly I love it. I do an entire show about it. It's great. But to me, the core of the Hearthstone audience, it started on PC, and I know that, you know, everyone says, oh, well, originally it was supposed to be a mobile game, and then they decided to just release it on PC and see how it did. That's all fine and dandy. But when you have a game that's on PC for so long before it releases into the mobile space, you have an entire, like, $250,000 prize pool in your world championship. It's a huge esport. There's tons of people streaming. They're not streaming from the iPad. They're streaming from the PC. It's when it was awarded Mobile Game of the Year, it's amazing that they got recognized, because what they put together with Hearthstone is fun. It's addictive. It's easy to pick up, but it's hard to master. I love, love, love the game. But I almost feel like it cheapens the Hearthstone experience to call it a mobile game. I think it deserves so much more recognition than that. So as awesome as it was that it won Mobile Game of the Year at, what was that, the VGAs? What was, where did it win that?
GameSpot, I think, gave it handheld Game of the Year.
It was a big, big, big award show.
Oh, maybe it was the Game Awards.
I think it was the Game Awards.
Sorry, yeah, but I remember another outlet had done the same thing.
Yeah. And a lot of people are doing that. And I feel like it's almost a cop-out. Like, they feel like they can't give Game of the Year to Hearthstone just because it's kind of on mobile platforms. They've got big audiences in multiple places. They recognize that it's a fun card game. It's an eSport now. But they feel like they can't stack it up against things like Dragon Age, things like these big AAA RPG-type things. They're just like, well, it's just a card game. No, it's not. It's freaking awesome. And I think it can go up against things for Game of the Year, and calling it Mobile Game of the Year is a cop-out.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean...
sorry. I went really ranty there. I'm sorry.
I agree with everything you're saying. do I think that IGN would pick Hearthstone over some of the bigger AAA titles? And let me finish. No. Because when you look at IGN, they are a conglomerate of multiple editors that are like vying to get their choice for Game of the Year. Mm-hmm. And I think when it really comes down to it, these are people that are playing everything. And that's the difference between their Game of the Year and our Game of the Year, is that ours is Jocelyn's Game of the Year, Ryan's Game of the Year. There's no gamers in Game of the Year, although I did think about that, but then we would have had to have multiple parts of this episode.
Yeah.
And that's why I like doing these episodes, is because we get to just showcase our favorite games. But and there might be an outlet out there that has enough editorial staff out there that love Hearthstone, and that it could be Game of the Year. I don't think that it is weighed any less because it is on mobile, or does not stack up against Dragon Age. I think it certainly does, because it is a very solid game with no bugs and very good design.
Not no bugs. There are bugs.
Okay, maybe there's bugs, but I don't know. No, exactly. Like, there's not a bug where I can't go talk to, I can't go turn in my quest. Minions? Yeah, and I can't, dancing minions. Oh. But yeah, no, Hearthstone. But Threes,
but yeah,
is,
so no, it is not Mobile Game of the Year for me. Threes.
No, but I do think it's a cop-out to call it Mobile Game of the Year, because there's a lot of great mobile games out there right now, and like even Monument Valley is a great
mobile game. Yes, and I was really kind of close to, between Threes and Monument Valley, what I wanted to say was my mobile title of the year, because Monument Valley was also fantastic. And that's the kind of thing, you know, like where Hearthstone is so big, it's almost like too big to be a mobile title. And especially given the fact that it's Blizzard behind it, it's really, really hard then for these other mobile titles to compete. There's so much good in this category that when you throw Hearthstone in over top of it, like, there's no Threes eSport. You can't win $100,000 by being the best in the world at Threes. Like, it's it is a totally different category.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any reason why whatever you pick on the go can't be your Game of the Year, because as we've seen, like, hey, best soundtrack can certainly be the same as most disappointing of the year for our game, you know, like there can be multiple iterations of a game in different categories. So but no, I pick Smash Brothers because it's just a solid port that no one ever thought Nintendo would ever be able to do, because you always just love playing. I always love playing on the consoles, and it was just such a delight that it works so well. And I loved playing it on the go, and it worked, and it's just solid. And if you have a 3DS and don't have a Wii U and you love Smash Brothers, do not be afraid to go out and get Super Smash Brothers on 3DS. It is a very good version of that game.
So, okay. Next category. I have absolutely, literally no segue for this, so we're just going
to
jump right in.
You don't need to segue every one. If you get, like, maybe three quarters of them, like, segued flawlessly.
I think I did a pretty good job so far.
Yeah, but let's give you a break on this one.
All right, so character of the year. Again, I think that mine's going to be a little bit of a discussion, so I feel like we should let you go first, Ryan. Who is your character of the year this year?
I had a hard time picking my character of the year, and I kind of...
So did I.
Yes, I know. I don't know, but I can see by the notes that you might have. I didn't feel like there's a lot of good characters this year. Not a lot of standout characters. There's a lot of good characters, but not a lot that were like, oh, yes, this one. So the character I chose was the Inquisitor from Dragon Age Inquisition, and that feels like a kind of a cop-out to me, because it's kind of like... it's a over-designed character. Like, there's multiple dialogue choice. This is your main character, sorry, in Dragon Age. Okay. And because it's a BioWare game, there's, you know, you can have multiple personalities that your Inquisitor in kind of has throughout the game. And you can be funny, you can be mean, you can be aggressive, a whole smattering of things. Like, but you're kind of whatever you play. So the reason it was my favorite character this year is because I played him exactly the way I would have wanted my character to be played. Mm-hmm. And I really dug the way that BioWare wrote the Inquisitor, wrote the dialogue options, wrote the interactions between characters. My favorite thing in BioWare games is just to have interactions with characters. The way they write, you know, the romance stuff, the friendship quests, the interactions with, like, characters. Like, there's a guy that does something really bad and you're about to kill him and you get, like, one chance to say something really cool. Like, sometimes I would choose, like, something really aggressive. Like, he pissed me off. Like, I'm going to kill you. Or sometimes I'd want to be funny and I'd say, you know, oftentimes I'd have people saying, like, there's the wit our Inquisitor has. Like, they were making fun of me for making light of situations when the world's about to end. And mm-hmm. I just really dug that. And I love how BioWare designs their main characters in their RPGs. So I definitely have to choose the Inquisitor as my character of the year.
Okay, so basically everything that you just said there about the Inquisitor, about how you played it, how you wanted to, and mm-hmm. you made the decisions that you wanted to make, is pretty much why I picked this year, my character of the year is me. Because everything, I was going through all the games that I played, and I was like, okay, well, I can't really pick something from, you know, Diablo 3, because there wasn't really anything standout there. Warcraft, you know, the main character's me. ESO, main character's me. And I was just going through, and I'm like, every game that I played that was really, really good and sucked me in, even South Park for that matter.
Sure.
You are the main character. You're not playing as Cartman or Kenny. You're playing as
Sir Douche,
the new kid in town. Sir Douchebag. Exactly. Yeah. You are the new kid in town.
That is actually what they call you in the game. I am not making fun of Joss's choice. And now this makes a hell of a lot more sense.
You start typing in your name, and no matter what you type, he's just like, oh, your name is Douchebag? Huh.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's one of those things where I was going through and trying to figure out the games that had sucked me in and mm-hmm. what about that really sucked me in. And in the end, it was that I played every game the way that I wanted to and tailored it to me. And I was a freaking badass in uh-huh. so many different ways. And everyone else seemed to be these kind of like secondary characters to me and my badassery.
Right.
So that's why I picked character of the year basically is just me in whichever game I decide to throw myself into. So for that, I mean, it's WoW. It was Stick of Truth. It was ESO. It was Diablo. You know, just all of these things were so cool. Even to some extent, Smite, you know, like you change gods all the time. You're a badass in so many different ways. It had to be me. And then the chat room saying, like, oh, you're being so vain. And I'm like,
that's what I said before you explained it. No, it makes perfect sense. And I think, like, that's kind of what I picked, too. I mean, I didn't play the Inquisitor. Like I'm going to play this like Jocelyn would. Jocelyn's my character of the year this year. No, but
I don't mean Jocelyn. I mean, like, me, the gamer.
Yes, the gamer.
Well, no. Okay, that's how I should have said it. The gamer is the character of the year this year.
Yeah, like, injecting your personality into your choices. Like, Shadow of Mordor, you can't quite do that. It's pretty linear, but with World mm-hmm. of Warcraft, there's chances to roleplay. You can choose to stop a quest line if you're not liking where it's going. You can move on elsewhere. Dragon Age Inquisition, I can tell you right now that you're going to love it because there is a lot of options to inject your personality into those games, like any BioWare game. But that's a really solid pick and very well thought out. And it's really easy to say, like, yeah, I'm going to pick Joel for The Last of Us. It's like, well, that's an easy pick because that was a really great game and a really great new character, which I'm making fun of my pick last year. But
yeah.
No, that's solid. That's really cool. Yeah. Go play Dragon Age.
I will go play
Dragon Age. Not
right now. We have to do it right now. We only have like four more things to talk about.
Four most important ones that are
Yeah, all the really big, all the really big ones is basically what we're down to. So, old game of the year. So basically, this is something that came out in a previous year that has sucked us in, and we basically absolutely loved it. And last year, and it would still stand up this year, but I didn't want to pick the same thing 2 years in a row. So last year, my pick was Warcraft. I stand by it. Warcraft, I think, will always be kind of in the background. It's something that's always going to be there. I'm always going to play it. It's always going to be great. And I just, I have so much love for that game because of all the people I play it with. So, but that's not my pick this year. This year, I went with Link Between Worlds and actually had to look it up and make sure that it did come out last year, and it did.
It did.
But I played that a lot, and it's it was the first solid Zelda title in a really, really long time. It brought me back to what I loved about Zelda and let me choose the order I wanted to do things, which was awesome. It was a great departure from what they had been doing lately. So for me, Link Between Worlds was really, really good and kept me in it for quite a while, and was very close to my mobile game of the year. So because it's obviously based on 3DS, so that was for me. What was your old game of the year this year?
It was Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag,
which is also a very solid pick.
I did not pick it up until around February of this year. And old game of the year doesn't necessarily have to be something that came out last year. It can be, if we could first, like, hardcore play in Mario Kart, I'm pretty sure Smite is going to be our old game of the year next year, just so we can get in here as much as many as possible. But no, Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag, it was probably the best year Assassin's Creed has ever had. And that game's boat mechanics were just so great. And some, I've even heard the argument that the reason people really enjoy it is that the boat mechanics are so good and everything else is still just Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
I can see that argument, but I really enjoyed it. I played it all the way through. I collected as many things as possible. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the setting. And I
really liked Black Flag as well. Yeah. I know, probably want to say around 2004, 2005, I played it was just called Pirates. I think it was like Sid Meier's Pirates or something like that. And honestly, I played the crap out of that game so much. And that's basically what Assassin's Creed Black Flag is, except for like updated and amazing. So I'm just like, I was playing Black Flag and I was just like, oh my God, it's like Pirates, but better. I love it. I'm actually like in it.
And if you're wondering whether you need to, like, pick up Unity or pick up Assassin's Creed Rogue, which are the new games for 2014 in the series, and you haven't played Black Flag, skip those, play Black Flag, and you'll be happy you did, because that game is far superior to the new offerings. Actually, Rogue actually might be a solid choice, but it is last gen only, and I played Black Flag on PS4, which was, you know, higher res and looked a little better texture wise but I played that game for months. It was so good.
So before we talk about what our actual game of the year is for this year, Ryan, what did you miss out on? What did you wish that you had played in 2014?
Far Cry 4. I picked it up on Boxing Day. It came out in December, so it's really easy to have wished to play this game this year.
I was going to say, come on, that just came out.
It did, but there isn't many games that I completely miss out on, and that's both good and bad, because I don't finish a lot of games, but
yeah.
I loved Far Cry 3, and it was the first in the series for me, and when I saw Far Cry 4, I was kind of like, I wasn't really rushing out to get it. I ended up picking it up on Boxing Day. I got a deal at EB for like the main game plus the season pass, which is like a $90 deal for like half the cost on PS4, and I'm just looking forward to playing that game, and I'm sure I'll be talking about it in the next couple weeks as I finally get a chance to play it, but it's that one game that I didn't get around to because of, like, Dragon Age, World of Warcraft, insert large AAA title here.
Everything else that came out in the last month.
Yeah, it's been a busy month, so it's an easy one to miss out on, but it's also one of those big games that you see people talking about when they're talking about Game of the Year, when they're talking about their awards for the year, so I was unfortunate that I missed it.
Yeah. For me, and actually I rectified this on New Year's Eve, so we're just going to pretend that that happened at like 12:01, but I definitely didn't get into it as much as I wanted to, especially after playing a few matches. But Mario Kart 8, man, oh man, like that was so much fun. It was enough to make me want to go and buy a Wii U. It was just amazing. What?
I said, I told you.
I know.
I'm telling you for months. Nobody believes me. I'm just the madman ranting about Nintendo. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, to be fair, you never know what you're talking about.
I know what I'm talking about. I've made plenty of good points. Remember the dildo comment, like, at the start of the show? Solid.
That's like the fourth time you've brought it back up again, Ryan.
I know. It's because it's the only thing I've had. No, I'm just joking.
Oh, man.
Mario Kart 8, you wish you played it. You've rectified it this year at 12:01. Is it something you still...
I wish that I had played more of it. I do want to play a lot more of it, so I'm excited, though. Yeah. So that pretty much brings us to our game of the year this year. So Ryan and I don't tell each other what our game of the year is before we do the show. This is completely a surprise, although I think I might have an inkling as to what you're going to pick, as I'm sure that you think that you know what I'm going to pick. So, Ryan, what is your game of the year for 2014?
I mean, our game of the year category is pretty easy to predict, especially if you have been listening to the last 50 episodes of Gamers In. But surprisingly, this game I haven't been playing. I haven't been talking about a lot on Gamers In because it's a fairly new release. No, you know what it is. It's Dragon Age Inquisition. I mean,
oh, okay.
I wasn't trying to, like, steer you away from that. It was so late in the year, and we've had a lot of, like, themed episodes with the last couple months. So, I loved Dragon Age Inquisition. I did something interesting. I avoided all coverage on the game leading up to release. I knew nothing. I knew nothing about... I knew a couple things about characters, like who you could possibly be, but they were all out of context. Like, oh, who's Solas? Who's Cassandra? I knew who Cassandra was because she's from the second game, but, you know, I had vague ideas, but I didn't watch trailers. I didn't watch, like, gameplay demos. I saw a couple screenshots, but other than that, I was going in blind, which was a really cool experience, especially when they're, you know, advertising games 2 years in advance.
I'm trying to do that more and more often, and I'm trying to do that in a lot of different places in my life, including, you know, movies and TV as well. You know, when they on TV when they show, oh, scenes from next week's blah, I'm like, no,
yeah.
Stop it. And it's the same with, like, movies. I'm trying to stay away from a lot of trailers. I'm just like, give me the general idea of what kind of a movie it is, and I'll go see it. But if I see a trailer, or especially the closer you get to release, the more information they give you in these trailers, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And games are starting to be the same way with, you know, their crazy trailers, all the coverage, the reviews that come out before the game's out, and you're just like, okay, but, you know, like, it's too much information, and it can ruin a game or a movie or a TV show for you so quickly. So I've been trying to pull back and not see a lot of stuff before a game comes out.
It can certainly ruin, you know, the emotion you may have when something cool happens in a game because you've experienced it in a passive way. Like, in a trailer, there's this epic moment, and it's like, well, great, when I actually experience that in the real deal, it's not going to be as big a moment. And Dragon Age Inquisition has everything going for it on a next gen system. If you're playing on a previous gen, some of these qualities are lesser. Like, the graphics are fantastic, the sound is amazing, the music is awesome, the characters are great, the story's really cool. And if you're big into, like I was saying before, if you're really big into lore of that series, you're going to be rewarded in both passive ways and big ways with the story and the progression. And it's one of the few games I played this year that I'm super looking forward to more content. It was my Mass Effect 3 from 2 years ago, you know, where I was like, I finished it. And it's like,
when's the next thing?
Yeah. When's the next thing? And that's always exciting and a little depressing because you're kind of like, well, I'll get DLC, but I'll still have to wait months. And to get the next big product in the series, it's going to be years. And that's always just a little bit of a drag.
Aww.
Yeah. Oh, but no, Dragon Age Inquisition. If you love RPGs and you like BioWare, certainly check it out. PS4, Xbox One, PC, and hopefully we get some DLC noon soon. And multiplayer. There's really great multiplayer. We didn't even mention that. It's great multiplayer.
Yeah. So do you have, before I give you mine, do you have a runner-up at all for Game of the Year? anything that came close but just didn't quite beat out Dragon Age?
I don't know. Maybe Smash Brothers. It'd have to be a tie between the Wii U and 3DS version.
I was thinking maybe you might have said Shadows of Mordor, but
That's the thing. Shadow of Mordor, if I had played it when it came out, it might have been a very tough call. But I've been playing. I've literally put 15 hours into it in the last 2 days. So that'll probably be my old game of the year next year. That game is fantastic. So good. But no, Smash
Sorry,
Brothers.
I didn't mean to put words in your mouth. I was just curious because I know, Shadows of Mordor did so many cool things with the whole Nemesis thing.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, so I thought that maybe that might have been your runner-up. But for me, I think probably for anyone who is paying attention to me outside of even just Gamers Inn, but for me, my game of the year obviously is Hearthstone. And my runner-up game of the year is Smite. And the reason for the two of those is I looked at my year and I kind of went like, what keeps me coming back? Like, you know, I've played all these other titles, and when I actually went through and listed out everything that I'd played and talked about on Gamers Inn, in the end, I spent, 4 to 5 hours on some of these titles, and I always defaulted back to either Hearthstone or Smite. And it took me a really long time to pick between those two games. And it just kind of, if I look at my whole entire year, we've got both Hearthstone and Smite that officially launched in March. And I have played them more than anything else. I have sunk more money into them than anything else. Both of them went from launches in March to, Smite's World Championships has the second largest prize pool of any esport ever. Like, they're at something like $2.5 million. That's insane. Mm-hmm. That's so much money. And that's huge for a game that just came out. Mm-hmm. So I feel like they've just made huge leaps and bounds. I mean, Hearthstone went from like this teeny tiny little game with this teeny tiny little team at Blizzard, and everyone kind of hoped it was going to do well, but no one really knew what was going to happen. And it went from that to this crazy world championship esport thing. Everyone's streaming it. Everyone loves it. Like, for me, Hearthstone is just so amazing. The community in Hearthstone is great. Like, there isn't a part of that game I don't love, and they hit it out of the park with their Goblins versus Gnomes expansion. Mm-hmm. So much fun. So much fun. And the developers are so open. They interact with the community. They're super nice, and basically they just want everyone to have fun, which I really think, like, that's what games should be doing, is just trying to make everybody have fun.
Yes.
And they're just as excited about the game as the people playing it. So for me, hands down, it was Hearthstone. But I tried to look at it kind of as a full year thing, as opposed to just like a title I picked up that I played, even if it was something like Dragon Age, where, you picked it up, you played it, you went all the way through to the end. And I guess Dragon Age is a little bit different because you say you're looking forward to the next batch of content. But I find, in general, I picked stuff up, I played it for a while, and then I put it down. And those two were the titles that really kept me playing all year long. So for me, Game of the Year, Hearthstone.
Yeah.
And I mean, absolutely.
That's the other thing, too, is that Game of the Year category, you can slice it no matter what way you want it. But in my mind, it doesn't even have to be something you played every year. Game of the Year is the favorite experience you had with gaming this year. And obviously that goes to Hearthstone for you.
Yeah, it does.
You do a podcast about it.
I do a whole entire podcast about it, yeah. And you guys, you can be happy it won't be Game of the Year next year because it's only official release year. So I promise I won't talk about it next year. But,
Wait, yeah. There's no...
Now Barbecue Master in chat room saying, and it's mobile.
Yeah, well...
Exactly. It's even across platforms, even on Android now.
It's mobile if you can figure out how to, whether you want to spend the extra $50-$100 on your 3G iPad or whatever.
Yeah.
there are arguments about that, but yes, you could. Yes. If you need an internet connection, so.
Yeah.
But I think Hearthstone's a solid pick. I think what was your runner up? Smite. Like that's
Smite.
Like that's a solid pick. Smite. I had a lot of fun playing it, and I always found that Dragon Age would pull me away from anything. Doesn't matter what it was.
And that's the experience that I had with both Hearthstone and Smite this year, is that was what pulled me away from even Warcraft, which is pretty huge. I found, you know, there were lots of times that I'd be sitting and I would be playing Warcraft and, you know, someone would come online, you know, Josh, Jimmy, you know, Rem, you, somebody would come online and it'd just be like, Smite, Smite, Smite. Okay, Smite.
That is a thing. It's a games in thing. Smite, 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 Smite. Like, people don't understand that unless they're in the chat room, like, after we finish a show. That's usually, like, the common phrase uttered.
Yeah, it's just the whole chat room just starts going, Smite, 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 Smite. Yes, okay, we're going to stream Smite. Calm down. So, yeah, that was my two game of the years, but definitely Hearthstone was my number one. So,
perfect.
What are you most excited about in 2015?
I am most excited for Zelda on the Wii U. I cannot wait.
I am also excited for this, and we talked about it very, very recently, so, I mean, we won't go into too much detail. Right. We're also running way, way long, which I should have known that we would.
It comes with the territory.
Yeah, but Zelda for Wii U, I'm also excited about. I don't have a Wii U yet, which I think is probably why it's not my most anticipated title of 2015. And also, I didn't want to pick the same thing as you, but they have announced some really cool things, and, I mean, God, that horse running for itself and being able to not run into trees, pfft. Game of the year 2015, bitches.
Yeah. Well, I really do think that for me, my most anticipated usually doesn't end up being my game of the year, but I just really love experiencing Nintendo games. Like they're always I'll buy pretty much anyone because I get a special enjoyment out of playing Nintendo games. I don't know what it is. It's just, they're just always all so great.
You know? Sparky. Hmm. He just, Sparky Shocker in the chat room, just threw out there something that I had totally forgotten about. But now that he said it, I had so much fun in the, Alpha Weekend? Yeah. Oh, dude. Oh, my God. It was so much fun. And that's Evolve. And actually, I think it might make me change my pick because...
change it in the dock.
Yeah, dude. Okay, so my original pick was The Order, and I'm still going to stand by that. So The Order 1886 is a PlayStation title. I just bought a PS4, and The Order is what threw me into the full-on, you know what, I'm just going to pull the trigger and get a PS4 camp, is because The Order comes out in February. And it's so, I'm so excited. I mean, it looks like there's a woman who's a playable character, which isn't always, you know, my number one thing in a game, obviously. But I do get excited when I get to play as a badass chick, because I'm a badass chick. So when I can see myself reflected in games, that's always really cool. But for me, the biggest thing is that we're talking alternate history London, which I love Europe and everything about, like, Templar Knights and all just that really, really cool stuff. And especially King Arthur. I am a huge King Arthur nerd, and Mort d'Arthur is fantastic. It's a really old book, which is pretty much like the be-all, end-all of Arthur lore. And they're pulling that all together into a really fun action-adventure title. So, cool. I mean, or what looks like a really fun action-adventure title. So it's what I am most looking forward to in 2015 so far. But yeah, man, I forgot about Evolve. We did play this, and I streamed it with Octane, who has been on the show a couple times now in 2014 with us. Octane Pro SC2, but 2 like II. Yeah. On Twitch, he does a lot of Smite streaming. We've had him on here before. He's so much fun to play games with. And we played that in the Alpha Weekend. And that's the game where you play, you have four different people and one monster. So it's a 5-player multiplayer experience, and it's the 4 players versus the monster. And man, is it fun.
The beta, I believe, is coming this month.
Oh, yay!
It keeps trying to download in Steam for me, so I don't know whether that means it's coming soon and I'm going to be in the beta, and I missed the alpha, and I...
Well, it was only like 1 weekend, which I didn't kind of realize that it was only 1 weekend of access, but yeah, we played a lot, and it was so much fun, so...
You should play it when it hits beta.
Yeah, Evolve is up there for me too, cool. I think, in most anticipated. So I think that pretty much does it. We do have a whole bunch of patron picks that we're going to go through now for Game of the Year. So anyone who is a patron who wanted to let us know what your Game of the Year is, we're going to talk about them. But just before we do that, I wanted to remind everyone that if you want to show off your TGI pride, you can head on over to slashloot.com, that is slashloot.com, and grab yourself a Gamers In t-shirt. They have tons of other awesome shirts, including all your favorite podcasts like Azeroth Roundtable, Torn Think Tank, Zombies Ate My Podcast, and The Angry Chicken. So go to slashloot.com and show off your podcast pride. So you know what? I'm going to talk about our Patron of the Week first before we move into our Patron Game of the Year picks.
That's why it's in there.
We wanted to thank Brandy H. for being a patron of the Gamers In this week. Thank you very much for your pledge. It helps us do everything that we do, and we love each and every one of you, including Mike E., who wrote in and said that Smash, which I'm assuming Super Smash Brothers?
Yeah.
would be his game of the year. He said, getting people excited about the Wii U and being so polished you can see yourself in it. Or maybe Wolfenstein New Order. Edit. No, I actually just finished part 3 of Wolf Among Us, and that wins now as long as it doesn't tank in the end. Brackets, please don't tank.
Mike is a decisive man. And
very, very decisive. Hey, you know, we had multiple picks and we had runners up and stuff, so understandable.
Basically what you're saying is our patrons don't follow instructions. I asked for one game. Good sir. No. I agree with him. Every year is always so tough to pick, so I do not blame him for including 3. Those are all solid choices.
Yep. Chat room is actually asking if we think that we're going to get Overwatch in 2015. I don't think so.
You get beta 2015, but you ain't getting the main release.
I don't think so, no. It seemed pretty polished, but there were also some pretty big things that I think they're going to need to look at. So,
Hearthstone seemed polished.
No, Overwatch is not coming in 2015. All right. Shush, chat room.
Come on, chat room. We're trying to finish this thing.
So go. You can take the next one.
Yeah, sure. I'll read the next one. Comes from Josh C. You know who you are. Smite. The game is well-balanced and has an exciting twist on the MOBA genre by going third-person. No matter how many awesome games I played this year, Smite was the only one I continuously went back to. Developers listen to community feedback on god changes and new Game of the Day ideas. While MOBAs don't traditionally have the Game of the Year title, it is hard to deny it to a game that I have invested the most time and money into while knowing I plan on investing even more. Yay, Smite. GG Hi-Rez Studios.
Yep, it's very hard to disagree with any of that.
Yeah. I don't often disagree with Josh unless it comes to the Xbox.
So. Josh is too damn smart.
Yeah. Like, what should my god do? 2 does this? Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like he can play the game while telling us how to play the game at the same time.
Josh Stradamus is what the chat room is calling him.
No, Joss as in me, not
Josh. Oh, Josh Stradamus. Sorry. I don't understand when that's... Oh, right, because of the beta for Overwatch. Anyways, continuing. Yeah. Chat room, you're distracting me.
So, Christopher C. is agreeing with me and saying, Hearthstone, it's the perfect balance of easy to learn and challenging to play at higher levels. Plus, it's addictive as hell. So there you go. We have Super Smash Brothers, Wolfenstein New Order, Wolf Among Us, Smite, and Hearthstone. So, yeah, see, everyone agrees with me, Ryan.
I think that's only one person. Be. There's only one person that agrees with you, but hey...
Nobody picked Dragon Age.
No one did pick Dragon Age, but we only had 3 people. It wasn't a solid sampling. But hey, like I said, it's about my Game of the Year. You can keep your Game of the Year. I love Hearthstone, and I'm sure you're going to love Dragon Age, but you guys should all go to patreon.com/thegamersin, and you too can have your text stuff read on the show, like we just did with Mike, Josh, and Christopher.
Exactly. If you'd like to visit us on the web, you can do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. No, wait, that's the email. You threw me off with telling them to write in. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including StarCast, Campaign Roundtable, Biggest Fan, and Amove Radio. You can follow us on Twitter. Wait, hang on. Hang on.
What?
This is the old notes. StarCast isn't a thing anymore.
Oh, right. I probably copied these. See?
You totally copied and pasted from last year.
You were commending me. But you read it. It's like a teleprompter. Are we having a Ron Burgundy moment here?
All right, let's try this again. You can find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including Into the Nexus, Campaign Roundtable, The Angry Chicken, and Amove Radio. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GIS Gamer. Ryan is at R. Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers In. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/JocelynMoffitt. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what your Game of the Year picks are, please do at info@gamersin.com. thebrainpodcast.com. Before we go, I just want to give a quick shout out and thank you to Greg Moffitt for creating our music. You can find him on Twitter @SoundsInfluence. Thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week.